Now, friends and neighbors, we've got a most interesting friend and neighbor here to chat with today, Mr. Alf Mash. Alf retired the day before Christmas in 1966 after being with Inco for 49 years and 6 months. Well, now tell us, Alf, you might have made it an even 50. How come the 50 doesn't get in there?
We didn't want to do one more winter. The winters wasn't so cold, but it was just traveling back from Sudbury to Cobblercup. I'd moved to Sudbury at the last 2 years before I got my pension. And there was traveling on this bus that I didn't want to do no more.
And you thought after 49 and a half years that was about enough, eh?
Time to hang up.
Hello, Alf. How many miles would you travel in 49 and a half years? Ever figured that one out?
Oh, never tried to figure that thing out.
You don't consider yourself a million-mile pilot or anything like that?
No.
All right, Alf. Let's start at the beginning. Where are you from? Where were you born? Where's your hometown?
In England, someplace.
Someplace? Whereabouts in England?
In England, Croydon.
Now, what's familiar about Croydon?
All I know about that place, there's an airport there.
I see, and how old were you when you left Croydon?
About 9 years old.
And presumably you emigrated to Canada then, is that right?
Yeah, that's right, to North Bay.
Well, why Canada and why North Bay?
Well, my father had friends in North Bay, so that's where we had to go someplace where we had somebody to go to start with.
That strikes me as kind of interesting, eh? You'd look at a great big country and say we know one person in one town or one city and we're going there, right?
That's why we went, come with these friends, and this friend, he had his son in North Bay, and that's where he headed for.
Do you have any recollections of coming to Canada?
No, I don't remember much about it at all.
Why did your father, why did the family emigrate, Alf?
Father was on strike at the time with the printers. And he thought he'd better get someplace to make a living, keep us kids.
That's as good a reason, I think, as any, eh? So, here we have you then in, you and your father and mother in,
Two sisters.
North, and two sisters
two
at this time?
Yeah, two, oh yeah.
They were older sisters.
They were older
were
than me, yeah.
To North Bay in 1913,
yeah.
And did your father get into printing when he got over here?
No, he went right to work for the CPR, and just from one end of the kind of work to the opposite kind of work, from ink under his fingernails to grease under his fingernails.
Well, I got to admit, Alf, that that's quite a switch from printer to locomotive. How did he get that? Did he just ask for any kind of a job and be offered that, or what?
These friends come along, I suppose they done the best they could for him and get him a job. And I guess he was glad to get anything he could do them days.
Well, now, tell us a little bit about the impressions of a young English boy at North Bay around 1913 or 14, going to school.
Oh, we had to take up music lessons, and that was one thing against my grain. I was never going to be a singer.
Did you find the sports or anything like that different at all?
Yeah, sports them days wasn't so active as they are today. Well, I mean, say, at that time, I was just new in the country. I didn't get a chance to get into these things as much as the kids do today, do they?
I guess not, eh? Did you ever try to play hockey?
I never tried to play hockey. I just got myself a pair of skates and done just skated for fun, yeah, that's all, but never tried to play hockey, no.
Are there any people around that you... men around or women around that you went to school with at that time?
No, I see some of them, but I don't know the names. The girls, it's different with girls. When you see girls today, you remember them, but when they're married today, they've all got different names. You can't place them anymore.
All right, then, Alf, at what age and what year did you finish school in North Bay?
Well, I got out of North Bay about the end of 14, I guess. Beginning of 15, I guess. Come up here to Coppercliff. Stayed with my sister, she got married.
All right, and then what happened?
Well, and then I hung around. I went to school in Cobblecliff.
Right.
And then 17, I started to work for Inco as a messenger boy.
What kind of work were you doing then?
A messenger boy for Inco in the general office.
Taking messages from who to where?
From around town, and one thing that used to happen them days, there was a man by the name of Mr. Winkler. He worked in the engineering department, and when he come back from wherever he was going, we used to drive him home and then take the horse and bring him back to the livery stable.
Well, now, just a minute. When you when you were delivering messages, was this by horse and buggy, or was this...
No, no, when this man come from wherever he went all day.
Yeah?
He'd come back to the office, to his office.
Right.
Well, then we'd have to take the horse back to the livery stable.
Oh, I see.
Because he wouldn't want to take it to the livery stable. He'd send us kids down with it.
Well, did you enjoy that work?
That was really nice. That's what we all waited for.
Well, now, Alf, we're trying to get this into perspective. Incidentally, friends and neighbors, we're chatting with Alf Mash, who retired on the day before Christmas in 1966, after being with Inco for 49 years and 6 months. After that, he thought he didn't want six more months. 49 and a half years was long enough. I believe, Alf, we were talking about your father being in North Bay and then coming to Coppercliff. Is that what happened?
Yeah, he came to Carl. He brought me to Coppercliff.
Yeah.
To stay with my sister. And while he was in Coppercliff, one of my neighbors took him through the smelter, and the first thing he saw was something he liked, and they got him a job, and he stayed up here. He took it in.
Alf, I'm going to say that it's nice to have friends. Who was this that helped you out?
A man by the name of Mr. Alec Kerr, well known in Sudbury.
Well, now, Alf, you didn't stay as a messenger boy. You sort of got a promotion from there, didn't you?
Got a job from one general office to the warehouse office and worked for Tom Kane.
What kind of work were you doing in there?
Messenger boy, filing over there, invoices, and cleaning the office up in the morning and getting everything straight for when the man come to work.
Right.
And about 3 months of that, and then over in the next office next door and work for shop's office, delivering orders around the shop. Everybody come in, wanted work done. It was my job to take the shop orders around to each shop.
But I believe that after this sort of clerical work, you got on to... moved into the locomotive shop now.
Yeah,
that
was our idea, getting started that way, and then we got set up in whatever shop you were trying to get into, you went into. I went into the locomotive shop.
Well, now, had you wanted specifically to get into the locomotive shop?
I wanted to go in that so bad, locomotive work, because being in North Bay watching my dad hang around the roundhouse, I got that idea that I wanted to be around engines. But I might say,
yeah,
when I was in these offices, every time I went out of an office to go to another office, there was a fellow following me by the name of Ed Walker in Sudbury, Holly Highland.
I see. Is he...
Holly followed me and he went in the machine shop.
Right. Okay, well now we go. What was your first job in the locomotive shop?
Well, learn to name all the different tools and do what I was told, file and take things apart. Most of the first part was clean up all the dirt and grease off everything after the guys took the engine apart.
Well, that sounds reasonable. Now,
then I used
literally,
to,
what would you have to clean up? I mean, when you say took the engine apart, what do you mean by that?
Well, they take the side rods off, clean the grease all off them, and when they take the journal boxes off, and take all the packing out, and take the brake shoes off, and clean all the grease off them. So, and then... lay it all out on the floor, so when we put the new stuff on, it'll be all new stuff to go back on again, you see.
Well, when you'd strip down a locomotive, then, how far would you strip it down?
Strip it right down, just the frame, nothing left on it, just the frame, just the boiler and the frame. Then the boiler mixers would come in, take all the tubes out,
right,
and they'd put all new tubes in. It'd just be the boiler and the frame. It'd be nothing, the engine would be just sitting up on two blocks on wheels, the carriages.
This would just, the engine would just be a hollow shell.
Just a hollow shell, yeah. Then we'd start from there and build right up again, all new parts right on it.
I find that interesting. You couldn't do that with a car today, though.
No.
The engines were a little simpler to take apart. And
car,
back
you just
together.
Take the engine right up, put another engine right in.
Right.
Just the same you do with electric locomotives today. You take the motor up, put another motor right in.
Oh, I see. But in those days, you took
everything apart and put new stuff on.
How long would it take to strip down a locomotive?
Oh, we'd have an engine in the shop maybe 3 weeks.
How many men would be working at it?
Oh, gee, yeah, that'd be five or six men. Five or seven. Yeah, five or six men, maybe four boiler makers and a couple of helpers.
Right. Well, now, before the broadcast, Alf, you were telling us something that I found interesting about what you call changing a tire on a steam locomotive. Now, just what was that all about?
We had a rim go around the outside of the tire, and we put the heat to it, and get it red hot, and then two men, one on each side with sledgehammers, would drive this rim right on, and then another man would put shims in all around it, then let it cool off so the tire would set. That's what keeps that flange on the outside, that's what keeps that engine on the track.
Well, that's interesting. Now, what do they do with the old tires?
Take them to the machine shop, and then turn them down again, I'll put a little bit of a bevel on them and make a nice flange, and if they're not too...
They can reuse them, eh?
You reuse them again.
Now, of course, does that apply to modern-day diesel engines, or was that just the old steam engines?
That was just the old steam engines, yeah. I don't know what to do with the modern engines today. They just take the whole wheel wrap, put a new set right on.
Right. Well, now, Alf, sort of recapitulating, we've got you. Your father emigrated to Canada, went to North Bay. He had been a printer. He got a job in the roundhouse at North Bay. You watched him working with locomotives. You wanted to try it out. After apprenticing with Inco and Messenger Boy and so on, you got at that. This was around 1920, 21 or something. I believe there was a plant shut down about that time. Is that right?
Yeah. When the plant shut down that time, all the single boys got laid off around Coppercliff. So I just took off and went wherever I could get work.
Well, I believe, was it about this time that you tried for some work out around the west?
Yeah, I went out west. Money I did have, at that time we got a ticket as far as Winnipeg for $10. And after Winnipeg, wherever you went after that was 10 cents a mile.
Just a bunch of young fellas, you'd be 20 or 21 years old yourself.
And we all broke out of different places, and everybody thought they knew where they could get a job, and because some was left on our own. I landed in Regina, and I got broke. And I went and looked for handouts to buy a piece of pie and a cup of coffee and a room for a night at the Chinese restaurant.
Those were tough days.
They were tough days, yeah.
Looking back on them, they don't seem to be so tough.
I've had a lot of laughs out of them since. And then we got a job through the employment office and sent to a little place called Milestone. And I put 9 months down there.
What were you doing down around Milestone?
Working on this man's farm, and I never drew a day's wages till the day I quit. He says, anything you want, go to the store and charge it up in his name. And when you quit, I'll write you all your money out at once. So when I quit, he gave me about $400.
Maybe he'd had experience with young fellas.
Oh, and another thing, he said,
$25 or $30 and blown it or something, eh?
Another thing. He says, if you quit smoking around my barn, he says, I'll give you $10 extra when you quit.
This sounds like a pretty wise old fellow, eh? What was his name?
Mr. Glenn.
Mr. Glenn, eh?
Glenn, yeah. He lived in town, and he rented his farm to another couple on a percentage base.
Right.
I don't know what it was. 60 or 40 or whatever it was, I don't know.
Well, you young fellows then, from the age of 17 or 18 to 21 or 22, those weren't easy times, but they weren't all that bad, eh?
They weren't easy times, but we never got hungry.
I guess
not. We always got time to eat.
If you had to ask for it, on the street now and again.
Yeah.
A little different from today is with our unemployment insurance commission.
No worry today.
I don't know if there's any young fellows listening to this or not, but there you have it, my friends. Well, now, Mr. Mancha, was it not around about this time that that something interesting happened on a street in Toronto?
Oh.
I'd like to tell us something about that.
I was walking down the street and I saw this girl. I figured she was a relation of mine, as I had relations in Toronto. So I walked up and tapped her on the shoulder and said, you're too proud to speak now. She turned around and says, it wasn't my relation after all. So I had to apologize, and the apology turned out we got more steady. In 1924, we got married.
I've heard many stories about how people met or how Dan Cupid works or romantic, and that's one of the great ones. One of the fellows we had on here a while back, his name escapes me at the moment, I don't know if it was Russ Brown or not, mentioned he was working in a store and looked out on the street and saw a girl going by and said, that's the girl I'm going to get married to. I mean, it's amazing the way that works. Okay, this one was 1924, you said, didn't you?
24, we got married.
24.
Yeah.
So what were you doing in 1924?
I was back in Coppercliff.
Doing what?
Oh, back on the crane. I had a choice to go on the steam engine, on the dinghy, but my master mechanic, he'd talk me in going on the crane.
Oh, I see.
So I went on the crane to please him, and 15 years I got off of that, went back on the engines.
Alf, I guess in those days, when you were, somebody sort of suggested you try this or that job, you attended to.
You went along. You done what you were told.
Now, what about family, Alf? Any family?
I have three daughters.
Oh, where are they?
One in Ottawa, two in Sudbury, and one girl in Sudbury's a nurse, and the other girl works for Inco in the general office. The other girl in Ottawa, she's a nurse, too.
Well, I bet you would like to say hello to your daughters and maybe to your grandchildren. Would you like to do that? Give their names on this broadcast, maybe?
Hello, Sandy. Hello, Bram. Susie and Mark.
Are they pretty good grandchildren?
Yeah, they're good kids. A good one boy. He's in all kinds of sport. He plays lacrosse, and he plays hockey, and he plays basketball.
Well, Alf, I gather that as a young English boy over here at North Bay, you didn't skate well enough, you didn't get into hockey or so on, but that you've been quite a sports fan for many, many years. Now, of all the hockey you've watched, who's your number one all-time hockey star as far as you're concerned?
Gene Béliveau.
Well, a lot of people will go along with that now, but others will argue on behalf of Rocket and Richard or Gordie Howe, maybe. What do you think?
Well, they're all good players, but Béliveau has been underrated for a long time. But Gordie Howe and Rocket, they're still good. You can't take anything away from them. But
I believe that you have remarried, Alf. Is that right?
Yeah, I got married in that year in the December 1971.
This, I believe, was to the widow of another Inco employee.
Another Inco employee, yeah. Sub-lady.
Alf, as I recall it, you met your first wife because on a street in Toronto, you tapped a young lady on the shoulder and said, too proud to speak to me now. How did you meet your second wife?
Oh, I got roped into carrying a bunch of tea towels home one night after a party.
Oh, and the tea towels led to what?
And the tea towels led to holding hands, and you know, from there on, it would go to the show, and that was it.
Ann. Well, Ann, you may have a comment or two to make to Alf when you hear this broadcast. Now, I gather, Alf, that you're interested in some club work around town. What organization is it you're with?
I belong to the Independent Order of Vaudevillers, and we try to do all we can to help others, and look after the underprivileged and see that everything they need, try to give it to them. And we have rallies and raffles to raise money to buy these things, to give these people wheelchairs and beds. And
well, now, Alf, in retirement, I gather that traveling is a bit of a hobby. Did you not take quite a trip to the Maritimes here a while ago?
Yes. This summer we put 42 days down to Maritimes, covered it all.
Right.
And then finished up with in a lakefront in Wasaga for 9 days to get a rest after driving 5,000 miles. Third trip in the Maritimes and 5 trips on the West Coast.
Well, now, as an engineer, have you ever traveled much by train?
I've had enough traveling on trains when I was running without having to go on holidays.
Right.
But one time out in Manitoba province, the ICMP stopped me on the side of the road, and he said, "Where do you think you're going?" I had a 6-cylinder Comet. He pulled me over the side of the road for going 70 miles an hour. So I had to explain to him my occupation and show him my license. And he called it all into the sergeant at the desk at Brampton. I had to sit there and listen to the sergeant from Brampton talk back to the Mountie in the car. I couldn't answer him back. And the Mountie at Brampton says, "What do you think, you run your engine now?" He says, "We want you to respect our highways."
Well, at least Alfie had a sense of humor.
Yes, right? He let me off anyway. I got away with it.
Fine. Alf, you've been around a while. You've seen good times and bad times. You've been on your uppers, as the people used to say in the West, but you've retained a great sense of humor. You've done what you wanted to do pretty well with your life. You got any advice or suggestions or mottos or anything for a young fellow starting out now? What would you say to him?
Well, if he's in my line of work, to make sure that when he gets the thing started, if he's on an engine, to get it started, to make sure he can stop it. Because as the master mechanic told me, anybody can start them, but you got to know how to stop them. So just take it easy.